Welcome to Cyber Focus from the McCrary Institute, where we explore the people and ideas shaping and defending our digital world. I'm your host, Frank Salufo, and have the opportunity this week to sit down with Sherry Pasco. Sherry is the director of the National Cybersecurity Center of Excellence at NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Prior to becoming the director of the NCC COE, Sherry led the effort inside NIST to refresh the Cybersecurity Framework 2.0, or CSF 2.0. Prior to that, she served in senior roles on Capitol Hill, on the Senate Committee of Commerce and Science, and really excited to sit down with Sherry today. Sherry, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
There are very few reports that I think have uniform agreement in the cyber community, but I think the cybersecurity framework is one of those few reports. And recently, you did a refresh. You just released the Cybersecurity Framework 2.0. Would love to let our viewers and listeners get a better understanding of what the report itself is and why it matters, please.
Yeah, so the NIST Cybersecurity Framework, like you said, it is used by organizations around the world and now become known as kind of the gold standard for cybersecurity, which is pretty cool.
Standard.
It is simply a list of desired cybersecurity outcomes. So what we hope an organization will achieve to reduce their cybersecurity risks. And it's used to assess cybersecurity risks at an organization and then use that assessment to take action to prioritize, you know, the steps that an organization needs to take to improve their cybersecurity posture, as well as communicate internally and externally about their cybersecurity posture. So it's very simple, a taxonomy, but the way that it has been used is really where I think it gets into the more remarkable space. We working on the update to the framework, we heard a lot of the different ways that organizations are using it to improve their cybersecurity. For example, you have really large global companies with complicated business units, different products. They are subject to dozens of different compliance regimes internationally, federal and state. They have different business units with different missions, different cybersecurity needs. They're using the framework to kind of organize everything they're doing on cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. So having one umbrella document that they can use to just think more strategically about where there are overlaps in their efforts as well as where there are gaps. And they're also using it to be able to communicate about those gaps with their suppliers, with their regulators, with their boards of directors. So it's a really strong communication tool for them. We also talked a lot with kind of smaller businesses, mm-hmm. also organizations that are less resourced, K-12 schools, local city governments. Their organizations are sometimes less complicated than larger businesses, but they have a lot less resources than some of the larger companies out there. And they're using the cybersecurity framework as a starting place mm-hmm. to start their cybersecurity journey. And so because it is written in such a way where different audiences can still understand mm-hmm. the terms that are used, It has been used in a lot of different ways to be able to tackle what, you know, each organization needs in their cybersecurity posture and in their journey.
Awesome. And I think correct me if I'm mistaken here, but one of the big updates is round one was really focused on a lot of the critical infrastructure owner operators, which quite honestly keep our lights on, keep our economy going, keep our national security and defense moving, and the ability to project power. But ransomware in the past couple of years made very clear that whereas our critical infrastructure owner operators, yes, they're still at the top mm-hmm. of the list, but cyber is everyone's business and everyone is a target. It's in some ways democratized cybercrime and cyber threats. So how would you say we differentiated? And I think there was a little more emphasis on governance in the 2.0, but how would you differentiate Cybersecurity Framework 1.0 and 2.0 Is it like Godfather 1, Godfather 2, or both great movies? So.
We hope CSF 2.0 will have the effect that CSF 1.1 has had, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, like you said, CSF 1.1 has had a really incredible ride the past 10 years. It is used around the world. It's been adopted by a handful of different countries. It's been translated into 13 languages.
Wow.
So it's really cool to see the reach that it's had, as well as hear from organizations on how it's helped them address their cybersecurity risks. So with 2.0, we really wanted to make sure that we're setting up a new version of a framework that will also last the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. So really addressing the current cybersecurity risks that we see today, as well as the future ones that we don't know about yet.
Mm-hmm.
That is our goal with the new version of the framework. And there were a number of changes like that you just pointed out that we made with the new version. The whole update process, though, I think is worth pointing out. We took a very community-driven approach to updating the framework.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, not to cut you off, but that I think is unique mm-hmm. in any strategy where people talk about bringing in various stakeholders, and sometimes they do. But I think both CSF original and 2.0 really did take the time, the effort to bring in mass communities into crafting this. So just in the for what it's worth, that often gets lost in the shuffle, but the how is almost as important as the what.
I just needed
to give you props for that.
No, thanks for pointing that out. For us, the how is very important, right? The journey that we took the past 2 years to update the framework was really important for us, making sure that organizations are going to use it mm-hmm. once we developed mm-hmm. it, and that it was going to be helpful to them in their kind of cybersecurity challenges. We had 4 public workshops. These workshops would reach thousands of individuals. Our first workshop had more than 8,000 people register
wow.
from over 100 countries,
wow.
which is just really remarkable to have that level of engagement from the community. And we had it was a great kind of fun journey to work with so many different organizations, many of whom are using the framework today, a lot of them those who really love the framework.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see that they saw a part of themselves in the framework, and so wanted to be part of the up. And so just a brief rundown of some of the changes. All the changes that we made were based off of community feedback, folks telling us what they wanted to see changed based off of how they're currently using it. One of them was, making sure that it's broadly applicable to all organizations
mm-hmm.
And not just critical infrastructure or those that have defined themselves as critical infrastructure. We also wanted to make sure that it was used by different audiences. So it's not just the type of organization, right, like a small business or a school or a government agency or a large corporation, everyone's using the framework, but also within those organizations, making sure that it is language that is understandable by a wide community of professionals. So not just the CISO, but mm-hmm. also folks in legal departments, folks that are overseeing acquisition, senior management, that they also understood the language of the framework so that it can be used as a really strong communication tool within an organization between cybersecurity professionals and non-cybersecurity professionals. And that's where cybersecurity governance also comes into play. We increased the emphasis on governance with 2.0. We added a whole new 6th function mm-hmm. on govern. And for those familiar with the current or CSF 1.1, the 5 functions have become the definition for cybersecurity around the world. They're used in legislation, in global standards. So it was a really big deal for us to change one of the functions, but we felt it was really important to add this new 6th function on govern to really emphasize the importance of the role that senior management plays in cybersecurity, as well as to make sure that companies are assessing and tracking that type of role. So we included that. It was interesting to watch just how much folks now really love govern.
Yeah.
They're thinking like it should have been there all along, but it really is just shown how much cybersecurity has progressed. It's not just those that
are. It's a boardroom issue.
It's a boardroom
issue. Not just
the
boiler. Yeah.
So we talk about it from the server room to the boardroom. Mm-hmm. And especially now that companies are increasingly using third parties and cloud computing services, the server room becomes less important. So the boardroom is now really critical when it comes to cybersecurity.
And it's risk like any other risk. And I think from a governance perspective, executives get that. And I think that is also one of the beauties of the framework. In many ways, it's what you make of it, but it allows you to ask the hard questions, see how you're structured and organized, try to think through problems before the balloon goes up, a ransomware incident occurs, and ultimately it allows this to be translated to executives who they make their living on understanding risk and battening down risk in a smart way, hopefully. Mm-hmm. So also since the first framework came out, you mentioned third-party vendors, and you blink and you miss the latest incident, Change being one of the big ones in terms of the role it plays in terms of processing payments for medical insurance and the like. And there are many others. You literally blink and you're going to see another incident. So where did supply chain fit into this update?
Yeah, so supply chain was another topic that we increased the coverage of in the new version, and was consistently a theme throughout the update process. We would have panels and breakout sessions just dedicated to third-party risks, because there were a number of kind of differing views on how to address it in the framework. There really wasn't a lot of agreement early on. Everyone agreed that it was important, but not a lot of agreement on how exactly to address it. Where we landed, based off of really significant discussion with the community, is we expanded the coverage of supply chain. We included it in the new govern function. Mm-hmm. So the govern function is a function that we view as informing the other five functions of the framework. So it's really fundamental. It's the piece you start with. Mm-hmm. So supply chain is something that is a consideration throughout the entire framework, but having that kind of fundamental governance piece for third-party risk we thought was really important. So we put it there. And I think it's a number of companies that we talked to are using the cybersecurity framework both internally, but also, you know, they're requiring it for their suppliers, or they're using the CSF because their suppliers are also using the CSF. So it's a strong communication tool to really figure out the security of the organizations within your supply chain.
Which became much more prominent after COVID and the pandemic, and obviously a lot of attention on personnel protective equipment and all that, everything from PPE all the way down to masks, and our inability to be able to draw on some of that, some of those needs and the like. But when you think about cyber, having visibility into your supply chain is a bit of a challenge. Department of Commerce has come up with some good recommendations around SBOM, where you can at least start providing bills and ladings and the like, but in some ways that's an analog solution to a very digital problem. And I had the opportunity to lead an effort for DHS in an advisory role on economic security, and it was very difficult to get any level of granularity on knowing your supply chain. Would you agree with that? Does this help at least ask the right questions?
Yeah, it certainly does help making sure that we have a common tool that organizations can use to be able to speak holistically about your cybersecurity posture. And so if everyone's using the same tool, it makes it much easier to be able to compare and, like you said, ask the right questions. Because it is really difficult, right? You might know, one organization might have 100 or 1,000 suppliers, and your suppliers also have suppliers.
On top of
suppliers, so it becomes very difficult to be able to track all along the process. We also, I'll give a shout out to my colleagues who worked on the NIST Secure Software Development Framework, which is a newer framework from NIST. I think NIST has gone into the business a little bit of developing frameworks given the success of the CSF, but the SSDF is really targeted towards developers of software and users of software to ensure the security of the software that they are acquiring. Taking some of the same principles of the CSF of having a common taxonomy, that is, I think, going to be a really helpful tool as well around some of the secure software discussions that are popping up now.
And not to lead the witness here, but that could be integrated as well. Because here's the thing, you have a SolarWinds, everyone looks back, they don't even know what they have, then it takes them a few months to gather the data and the information, and increasingly you are seeing technologies and particular equipment that is being banned in the United States through FCC and other sorts of and binding operational directives from different agencies. But I still, as a owner and operator, it's very tough to be able to say with 100% confidence, right, I know we do not have Huawei inside my system or whatever it may be. I'm not just picking on Huawei, but or Kaspersky. This, I think, with some of the software initiatives aligning with the cybersecurity framework, and at some point we need something similar for firmware. Yes, no? You got hardware, you got software. Yeah. At some point, that is the triad that's probably most difficult to get our arms around. But thoughts, should these all, and again, I don't mean to lead the witness, but do these all come together?
We would like them to all come together. So we've got a number of
unified theory.
Different frameworks for different risks, right? They were developed for a very specific audience. And then, like we talked about earlier, we work with that audience to develop the frameworks, which is why they sometimes look a little different. But one of our goals now is, yes, trying to make sure that organizations understand how to use these frameworks together. So we did include ties within CSF 2.0 to the SSDF. So it's clear, okay, here's the point in the framework when it makes sense to transition to look at the SSDF. Mm-hmm. We have other at NIST, the sister framework to the cybersecurity framework is the privacy framework. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's a Venn diagram between cybersecurity and privacy where there is an overlap between the two of them, and increasingly organizations are needing to address both of them. And one of the new things that we're doing at the NIST Cybersecurity Center of Excellence, which I lead, is really trying to focus on developing tools to help organizations leverage these frameworks both separately and together. We have this concept of a community profile, which is a tailoring of the framework for a specific sector or use case, really bringing the higher level outcomes of the framework closer to the end user. It's been very successful in certain sectors. The financial sector profiles, very heavily used within that sector, are also used by regulators to review compliance. And so we've taken that concept of, okay, if we can develop a CSF profile, why can't we develop a CSF and a privacy framework joint profile, really merging the frameworks together to walk through how an organization would use them together. So one of our first profiles is going to be on genomics security and privacy, which is
pretty big issue. Yeah,
it's a huge issue. It's an area where there hasn't been a whole lot of attention within the standards community yet, but a huge critical issue to ensure the privacy of your genomics data. That's very personal to you and every human being. And we're going to tackle that. Is going to be our first kind of joint cybersecurity framework and privacy framework profile that we'll do at the NCCOE. So we're excited about that.
That's awesome. And one of the things that I think, again, what makes NIST unique is it brings a little bit of science to the art of all of these issues, and bridging that gap and being able to translate to both those worlds is critical. And then I'll call it, not to be pejorative, but bridging the gap between talk and squawk and beep and squeak, where you bring the technical community with the executives, is no easy feat either. But it sounds like that's the sweet spot y'all are trying to jump into. Is that fair?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, we have to talk to a number of different communities. And we've realized that both within NIST, too, right? We've got a lot of folks with PhDs who are brilliant. We've also hired people from different backgrounds. They hired me with a policy background, mm-hmm. really to be able to make sure that we have the right expertise at NIST to be able to talk to these different communities. And the way that we do this at NCCOE is every time we stand up a project at the center, we do all of our work under consortia. So we will put out a call to the community and try to bring technology vendors together, which is a certain community. We'll bring end users together, experts in cybersecurity, and we'll put everyone in a room and make them work together to solve a certain cybersecurity challenge. So we certainly saw that on a much larger scale with the CSF, where we were working with at the NCCOE, we're working with maybe 30 companies under CRADA. The mm-hmm. CSF, we were working publicly with several thousand organizations around the world, including foreign governments, and really making sure that we understood universally all of their kind of varying cybersecurity concerns.
Sure. I'm going to go way off script, so forgive me if this is a bolt out of the blue, but you are starting to see a big move toward standards and regulations. And there is, a need to synchronize and make sure that a lot of these regulatory initiatives coming, again, from different agencies with different responsibilities and different stakeholders and different oversight, someone needs to make sure that all these sync up, and we're not expecting a company to have six different forms that don't even align with one another. Is that something you think your center would be well situated mm-hmm. to try to get your arms around?
Yeah, so it was really interesting. I think when the framework was first developed, there was a call from industry to keep it voluntary. Mm-hmm. And NIST is a non-regulatory agency, so we're used to building products that are voluntary and really focusing on finding the best technical solution, because we want to make sure that people are using it mm-hmm. when they don't have to use it.
Yep.
But over time,
but they should
be using it.
Yeah.
But over time, we started seeing the CSF pop up in federal and state regulations. It's now required for federal agencies. We're seeing it pop up in incentive programs. So like it's a requirement in the NTIA broadband infrastructure grants. Mm-hmm. It's Ohio has passed a safe harbor type law that incentivizes the use of the CSF. It's popping up increasingly in more of a regulatory environment. And what we saw with the update was industry has been asking NIST to now serve as a technical advisor to regulators to increase that kind of harmonization of regulations.
And we do need harmonization. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy I didn't go way off piece there. So,
yeah, it's actually, if you look at the recent cybersecurity strategy that was published last year, it actually talks about a lot of emphasis on harmonizing mm-hmm. regulations around the NIST CSF, and that can include actually requiring the CSF, but also just using the CSF as a taxon,
as a tool.
Be
able to view mm-hmm. all. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. where I could see it come in very handy. But I think it can also then serve as a bit of a independent arbiter to be able to mm-hmm. say, hey, this is a good spot, this isn't, and see the forest through the trees.
Yeah, so you can map, and we have a tool now to map between the framework and different standards and regulations. So you can see where the gaps are in a regulation compared to the CSF.
And Europe, EU, mm-hmm. US, state. Yeah, good. Mm-hmm. Well, before we jump into some of the other cool things the NCCCOE is looking at, anything else for our viewers and listeners that you would like for them to know about the Cybersecurity Framework 2.0? And what would success look like for you?
So we want to make sure that folks are using it. So let us know, as you're starting to use it, how it's been helpful, where you might need additional guidance to support you in using it. We didn't just put it out there as a tool and walk away. We want to keep engaged with the community to make sure that we need to develop a roadmap of additional tools to develop to help organizations now use it. And we've started to do that. We've developed a series of quick start guides mm-hmm. to help organizations that are newer to the framework. So there's a quick start guide for small businesses. There's one for supply chain. There's one for enterprise risk management. So they're really targeted towards specific audiences and use cases to get you started. If you're brand new to this, really would recommend checking those out first. They're only 3 to 4 pages, glossy documents that are a good kind of starting place.
Thank you for that. And I just do want to foot stomp for small and medium-sized companies, also state, local, tribal, territorial, where maybe their baseline isn't at the same level as some of the critical infrastructure owner-operators, and they don't have the resources that the Fortune 500 have to address this matter. Pick it up, read it. It will at least give you a strong starting point to know what you know and what you don't know. I think people often get overwhelmed. I'm still asked over and over, what is that 911? Who do I call when I get hit? Sadly, the cavalry ain't necessarily coming. You've got to start taking some of the steps now to protect yourself, your companies, your customers, and the like. So I just want to foot stomp for small and medium sized businesses in particular, which is the engine of our economy. Start by reading CSF 2.0. So I want to get now to congratulations on becoming the director of the NCC COE, National Cybersecurity Center of Excellence, over at NIST. So given your background also on Capitol Hill and in sort of leadership roles, you can't blink and not have a discussion around artificial intelligence. And I know NIST is doing some interesting work around AI. Anything there you'd like to share in terms of what keeps you up at night and also gets you excited in the day?
Yeah, so the NCCOE is really a special place at NIST where we have an opportunity to work really closely with companies and other governments around the world. So we've signed, we have a collaboration model where we've signed more than 400 CRADAs with industry over the past 10 years and more than 20 interagency agreements with other federal agencies. So we actually will build teams to work together to address a challenge, obviously leveraging the expertise of NIST and standards and technology, but then also the expertise as well as the hardware, software of different vendors to really be able to build a full picture of how to address a cybersecurity challenge. Mm-hmm. And we're tackling lots of challenges, right? Like you mentioned, AI is one of them. We're also tackling the application of encryption. So in response to post-quantum computing, which is another huge risk.
And we got to have you back for that. Yeah. That is a big area of interest.
It's a huge area. We're tackling how to implement zero trust architecture. We're working on projects on digital identity and mobile driver's license. So you name it, we've got a project on it. And on AI, what we're doing is we are building a test bed called Diopter that is really, it's an open source tool that anyone can use. It's freely available to the public. And so it'll be a new tool to be able to review adversarial attacks against AI. So we're really excited about not just developing paper and guidance documents like CSF, but also open source tools that are found on GitHub that anyone can use.
And this will help discern adversarial AI. Cool.
So it's pretty cool. And then I mentioned we have the NIST Secure Software Development Framework. A big role of the NCCOE is to help organizations be able to implement standards using commercially available technologies. So we'll be doing a project really squarely focused on helping to implement the SSDF. What are the artifacts that you need? And AI will be a really big piece of that, making sure that as we're developing software, that it is securely developed.
One word on quantum. What are your thoughts there?
It's a huge deal. We have our consortium on helping organizations migrate to PQC is probably one of our largest. We've got more than 30 members. And it's going to be a long-term consortium where it will operate for several years. It's not one of those where we're going to stand up and shut back down, because this transition to PQCs is going to be a long-term kind of transition. We have to make sure that vendors are developing new hardware, software to be able to support new cryptographic standards in response to quantum computing. We have to make sure that organizations, every organization, mm-hmm. makes changes to transition their hardware and software. We've got to update international standards. So it's going to be a huge effort to be able to make this leap, to be able to make sure that our data and our systems are secure against the threat of new quantum computers.
Which I think is essential. And clearly NIST's role is to engage the broader community of science on a lot of these issues, and good for you. That's so essential. But this is a race. Democracies cannot lose to autocracies. And I don't want to put you in an awkward spot, but we can't guarantee that's the case unless we put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into this, yes?
Yes, for sure. The mission of NIST, and we're located within the Department of Commerce, is very much focused on economic security and kind of the advancement of innovation. Mm-hmm. So that's how we view all of our work. Good. Is to making sure that the United States remains the global leader.
It's a race we can't afford to lose here.
For sure.
Yeah. And finally, Sherry, what questions didn't I ask that I should have asked?
I think I just wanted to expand a little bit more on that kind of economic development question. We have a project at NCCOE that's focused in partnership with Maryland, mm-hmm. and the Montgomery County, Maryland. We're working with small businesses in the state of Maryland, squarely focused on economic development. So we have a series of events that we hold at the NCCOE. They're called Cybersecurity Connections events. Mm-hmm. We host them with the state of Maryland, and we serve lunch. We bring in kind of cybersecurity experts and talk about how they've addressed certain cybersecurity challenges. And so they're a really fun event, really focused on building connections between businesses that are local to the region, creating new friends and business partnerships with organizations that are all dealing with similar cybersecurity risks. I'm really excited about this new initiative to really focus on something that's in our back door and in our close in our region.
Figuratively and literally.
So yeah. It's going to be pretty great to really be able to take some of the lessons learned that we have at NIST and kind of transition those into kind of local businesses within the region.
Sherry, thank you for spending so much time with us today. Thank you for your leadership, for really leaning forward and translating nouns into verbs with the cybersecurity framework and advancing that ball. And I look forward to all the good work you're doing at the NCCCOE. And thank you. And let me leave you with a token of our appreciation, both figuratively and literally. So thank you, Sherry.
Thank you.